All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Frontline Fridays, where we dive into the hearts and minds of leaders who elevate retail and hospitality frontlines to greatness. What's their secret sauce? We are here to find out. This show is brought to you by Ubik, the AI-powered mobile app that gives frontline teams the performance tools they need to communicate, learn, and work right in the palm of their hand. And I'm Ron Thurston, who will be your guide on this journey and the host of the show. I'm the author of the book called Retail Pride and the co-founder of a company called Aussie. And our vision is to transform retail recruitment with groundbreaking tech and a passionate commitment to the sector. And you can always check out useaussie.com, that's U-S-E-O-S-S-Y, to learn about the future of hiring. But today, I am really excited to have this conversation. So we are coming to you live here at the headquarters of LinkedIn in New York City, one of the headquarters in New York City. And about half an hour ago, there was an earthquake here in Manhattan. So if you hear alarms going off, you know, it's just adding some texture to the show. But Sharika and her team at Jobs for the Future hosted an event here at LinkedIn yesterday, and I was graciously invited to speak about retail pride and the impact that it has had on our industry. So Sharika and I have spent the last couple of days together, and I will say there may or may not have been this idea of a retail pride day officially launched on LinkedIn. So we will come back to you on that. But a quick intro about Sharika as we get started. She's a director at Jobs for the Future, which is JFF, and brings over 15 years of experience in business, program management, and talent development to her mission of championing success and opportunity for underrepresented talent. Before joining JFF, Sharika spent 2 decades in the retail industry, starting as a seasonal sales associate through store leadership roles and advancing into corporate. Her notable achievement includes leading Gap Inc.'s This Way Onward, where she and I actually met in 2021 when she invited me to speak to the graduating class for This Way Onward. And it tackles systematic barriers to employment and advancement for over 15,000 underrepresented early career talent. Sharika's commitment to inclusivity and strategic thinking is evident throughout her career. Armed with a Bachelor of Business Administration and Human Resource Management, which she earned, by the way, working a full-time job, she exemplifies perseverance and dedication. As an Atlanta native, Sharika enjoys spending time with her family, whether cheering 2 boys on the sidelines of recreational sports or exploring new destinations with her husband. She values creating lasting memories with her family. So, Sharika, let's kick it off and talk about yesterday first. So it was a very fun day. It was, a little, as I told you earlier, a little embarrassed to say it turned into a little bit of the Retail Pride Show, but I was really happy to be there. So thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for coming. It was, Retail Pride was thick. And I was excited. I was happy. And I'll talk a little bit about why we were there, but I shared with Ron what I experienced yesterday was what I felt. The first time you and I talked and you talked about Retail Pride, because it was such a connection to how I felt, right? How a lot of people felt. And one of the conversations we had yesterday, someone said, frontline workers, frontline managers feel misunderstood. So to have a book to like celebrate us is so heartfelt. So yesterday was great. JFF partnered with LinkedIn to host an event focused on navigating this new era in retail and supporting frontline worker mobility. And, you know, I'm so excited that JFF decided to start these series with retail, because retail is important. It's powerful. And employs, you know, over 32 million workers, impacts so many families and communities. And so when you think about what's important to me, to JFF, and creating better conditions for workers and ensuring workers are in quality jobs, retail is a critical engine to that. And so the conversation was around like 3 unlocks. We talked about worker voice, the power of the worker and their voice, and the importance for employers to not only listen, right, but to act. We also talked about career mobility and skills, right, valuing skills, talent practices that, you know, promote and benefit workers and a more resilient business. And then we also talked about AI. This one, I was so excited and interested. I think some of the conversation we had spilled over from the previous day of like what's possible with AI and how AI, everyone is viewing it as a big disruption, but how it can be our time in retail to center humanity, to center humanity in all industries as we think about some of the capabilities that AI can do. But it was a great day.
It was a great day. Yeah. No, and thank you for your leadership there. I just wanted to add, you know, when you talk about scale and size and the impact that these conversations have, yesterday in the room, there was senior leadership representation from almost every large retailer in this country. So Walmart, Target, Amazon, AutoZone, Nike, like the list was on. And statistically, which Kat shared, the brands in that room yesterday represented 5 million frontline workers. So if we're having important conversations about retail pride, but more importantly about worker voice and about how do we make sure that this is an industry that's moving forward? How do we use AI to enable growth, not disrupt it or change it, but actually enable progress to happen faster? The audience has the ability to do that yesterday. And that's what I found so interesting and so important. So thank you for you and JFF and here at LinkedIn for making that happen. But let's jump into more. I want to go high level with JFF, and then we're going to learn about you and how you ended up doing. So tell us more about the organization and as a nonprofit and its work that you do.
Yeah. So Jobs for the Future, JFF, we're a nonprofit organization that sit between the education and workforce ecosystem. And our goal, our vision is to see a society where equitable economic advancement is attainable for everyone. We know that our education and workforce systems are broken. It's hard to navigate. It's filled with barriers to advancement, particularly for those who are people of color, folks with degree, without a degree, or with criminal records. And so we know that these people are unfairly shut out of quality jobs and a better chance at life. And so at JFF, we want to transform those systems that create those barriers so that everyone can secure a quality job and a better outcome. And when we talk about quality jobs at JFF, it's not just about compensation and pay, although that's important. Can't pay people with pizza parties, okay? You need to give them money to thrive and survive. But it's also about stability and flexibility and autonomy and something that is near dear to my heart and the work that I do at JFF is voice and agency. And so we have a huge goal. In 10 years, we want to see 75 million people who face systemic barriers to advancement, work in quality jobs. And so the work that I do at JFF is on voice and agency. And what we are striving to do is create programs and practices that employers can adopt and integrate into their talent systems that give workers more of a say in how they experience work. And so what I've been doing over the last 6 months or so is focus on those strategies and working with employers and workers. I work with an organization called Collabel, Daniel Horgan, who's a phenomenal partner. And we lead these worker voice forums where we have 40 workers across the United States. And we have about 14 employers that we run them parallel. And we partner with them to explore like what's working, what are some of the existing practices of worker voice, what are the barriers, and how can we co-design solutions to advance voice. And when I'm talking about worker voice, it's not just about creating these platforms and channels and surveys and town halls. Those are important to listen to your people. But it's also about creating an environment where they feel safe and secure to share their concerns. They don't feel like there is going to be any backlash. And then acting on that and being transparent. And we had a discussion yesterday around, like, what does it mean to act? And I look at it as a journey, right? When you receive feedback from employees, right? You first want to acknowledge that I heard you. I heard what you said. This is what you said. This is how we're going to address it, right? And follow up. And so that's the work that I do at JFF. And I'm just super proud that I get to do more and bring some of my expertise from retail into this work.
And that 75 million people seems very attainable based on the energy that's going
in
on.
The room. Right? Absolutely.
If I say those brands in the room yesterday that we were having really rich conversations with impact 5 million people alone. And at the scale at which they hire, I mean, the representative from Amazon, there's over 1 million people that work in warehouses in Amazon in this country. And she was sharing stories about how they collect feedback and what they do with it. And so often it's about scheduling. It's about things that are real. This is not feedback about my boss. This is, I actually need flexible work. I need the ability to have a predictable schedule because this is not my only job. Or childcare. There's so many things that go into this conversation, but we're going to go deeper in a minute, but I want to actually learn a little bit more about you because you, like me, spent the majority of your career so far in stores, most of which at Gap Inc., which, you know, I have a personal long time chunk of my career spent there. So tell us where it started, you know, and how some of the successes you've had translate into today's work.
Yeah. So started over 20 years ago, seasonal sales associate at Gap. And I will tell you, I think about your book in the subtitle, The Accidental Career, right? Stop saying that. But I didn't go into it thinking that I was going to have a career at Gap. I stayed for a while and was working a few jobs to put together the income I needed to survive. I was in school. But I love the environment. I loved my team. I loved the managers, and they kept pouring in me and giving me more experience. And I said, you know what? I'll keep staying. I mentioned yesterday my thoughts around people asking, like, what do you want to do in a career, especially for early talent? You think about retail. There are a lot of employees in the front line that are young. They don't know what they want to do for their career for real, you know. And so it's like, how about we start to talk about advancement? And so, you know, I got opportunities to do like stretch roles in the stores, and I wanted to move up. And I remember this moment where I was in it as a sales associate. I had done some kind of like, I was like a expert in something, and we were having a big floor change, and the DM was in the store, and it's like, this is my time to ask, what do I need to do to move up? And the DM dismissed me. And it stung. It's like, oh, okay. But I didn't let that, you know, get me down. And so I found a way to be able to move up and took on assistant manager roles, general manager roles. Fast forward years later, I was in a meeting. The DM was there. Did not shame that person, but you just never know. I mean, it taught me a lesson as a leader, to really value your people, take time to talk to them and pour into them and invest in them. And so, as I was leading stores, one of the things that was super important for me was to look at the potential in people. Everyone has different experiences and backgrounds, and everyone doesn't come with degrees and credentials and such. And so for me, it was about like, what are you willing to do? And what are some of those natural skills that you have? You know, I would always say skill versus will. Like, I can teach you how to fold some jeans, but if you don't want to do it, then we don't have anything to talk about. And so just really, focusing on people throughout my career. I was always like a people manager. And then I decided to take some time off. I had kids. And I thought I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. I thought I wanted to walk in the mall with Starbucks cups in my hand. And I think a month later, I was like, no, this is, I'm going back to work. And so
I'm not surprised by that, by the way, just given that your career in stores.
Yeah. Okay. So I went back and I did field recruiting, where I was doing massive volume hiring for stores. And I mean, stores were needing like 40 sales associates at a time. And so as I was, you know, doing this, I said, wait a minute, let's stop for a second and do some training too. Like, I'm not going to send you these people in bad stores, right? Let's talk about your environment. Let's talk about how we can support. And so started naturally going into that, you know, not only recruiting, but training. And then an opportunity came open at Gap Foundation, which was huge for me. I'm based in Atlanta. And at the time, Gap's headquarters is New York and San Francisco. I never thought I'd be able to get to corporate. And I was so happy that I got that opportunity because I got to work on a program that provides first jobs for underrepresented youth. I could see a lot of those youth in me. I could see a lot of me in those youth. And while I was there, I said, I love the fact that we're giving first jobs, but like, what about advancement opportunities? What are we doing with this talent pool of engaged sales associates? How are we helping them advance? And so that is actually how I met JFF. I brought them on as thought partners in scaling that work. And we started the alumni advancement program, and that's where I met you as well. And that's the story of me in retail.
I mean, it's an incredible journey, to following really what lights you up, what you use this kind of what pours into you, because you've taken the parts of the role in retail leadership that you are most passionate about and evolve that to have an even bigger impact in the world. And it's some of the reasons of the work that I've done the last few years, or Retail Pride, all of it is, how do I actually take the pieces and the people that I know love this business and have incredible opportunity and maybe have never had a voice or never had the opportunity to grow, never met people that could actually support their growth? And so it's finding those paths that can do that, because you know that the work is so important. I've tried to do that the last few years. And in my work in leadership, you're doing that today. And I think how you did that is such an incredible story of like also tenacity and interest in following what you know is important too. And it sounds as though you also had to raise your hand a lot and you had to say, I want this, give me more. What do you say to current kind of field leaders who dream of doing more? Like, how did you get to that Gap Foundation job? If you could give a little bit of advice.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think about when I was in stores, and this reflects a lot in my work now and when I was at Foundation, I didn't wait on anyone to give me opportunities. I sort of created them myself. Now you can't do that if you don't have good business. So you gotta ensure, right? You do the things necessary in order to meet your goals. And I did. I had a great team. I built a great team. I ensured that they all were in their lanes. If they wanted to do more, I gave them opportunities to do more, which freed me up to be able to experiment. And so I started creating different initiatives, you know, doing my own thing and, you know, testing it, using wherever I was as like a little incubator to test out what was most important to me. And then sharing what I was doing and sharing, like building a case as to why this is important. How I discovered the opportunity at Gap Foundation, I was doing recruiting for in Atlanta. And they had this new store initiative for This Way Onward. And so I was chatting with one of the people on Foundation who I'm still close to now. And I was like, it's a little complicated. Like, you used to have this thick book, this playbook, like do all these things and this 100-page. I'm like, can we make this snackable? Like, I'm just giving feedback. And like, I may try this thing here. Let me know. And it's just, not being afraid to create opportunities for yourself. Network. Network is so important. Think about, look at us today. We had a conversation years ago, right? And you may think, oh, it's just this moment in time, but you need to leverage your, you need to build your network outside of your stores. You need to call folks in operations. You need to call people in LP, wherever it is that you're looking for. Build your own network and be self-aware. I think that's the last thing I'll say. Well, two things. Be self-aware about where you are and your capabilities. And if you have some weaknesses that are going to be in the way of you advancing, seek development to work on that. And find yourself a coach and a sponsor. It was so important for me to have a mentor that could push me and help me develop and be better, but also have someone to sponsor for me, because guess what? You're not in those rooms and you need someone to be in the room to say your name so that you can get those opportunities.
Beautifully said. Yeah. And the networking part is so incredibly powerful. And I would say network outside of your own organization. So if you see people in any organization, maybe it's a retail vertical that have those jobs, you're not going to get 100% response rate, you know, on a LinkedIn in mail, but try. Don't give up. Try. When you hear people like this conversation to say, you know what, Ron or Sharika may have someone or know, have insight or know someone who could help me. Like, don't be afraid to find those people, network with those people. I've shared on this show, you know, some of my experience working with the NRF Foundation now and their work with universities and NRF clubs at colleges all over this country. And while they connect with me on LinkedIn, I currently, since January, of the 1,200 students that I met, there are two that I'm having mentorship calls with. So two out of 1,200 who I said in front of them live, call me, like email me, connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm here for you. Two of them have taken me up on that opportunity. And I think when offered the chance, this is exactly what you did. Take it. Yeah, take it. Take it as far as you can, because likely the person on the other side is waiting for you to call and has so much information to share that no one is asking. And that's really strange to hear. You think people are so busy. I love to offer guidance, as do you. It's the work that you do.
And pass it on. You find yourself a mentee. It makes you better and stronger. Like there's so much energy you get from a mentee, you know? And so, yeah, you got to pass it on.
Got to pass it on. Let's, as we wrap up the last part here, I just want to go a little deeper on, I think, the opportunities that you're addressing in JFF around worker voice and obstacles to those careers for 75 million people. Just tell us more.
Yeah. So, you know, when you think about worker voice, and one of the things that we are digging into is how do we change the perception that, you know, we talked about even yesterday, this difference between employee engagement and worker voice. And engagement is important, right? It's assessing whether your employees are happy or, you know, happy with the work, aligned to the mission. What can you do to ensure that they stay happy? It's satisfaction. It's appeasing. Yeah. When you think about worker voice, it goes beyond that. It is the ability for workers to influence their outcomes, influence their working environment. And so that's a collaboration, right? It's not just, I have a problem. Can you fix it? It's, I've got an idea. I've got an idea about how to make this better. So you see them as collaborators, as key business partners. And so that's sort of the narrative we're trying to promote. And how you do that is important. I talked about, you know, acting. I talked about, you know, giving them a platform, amplifying their voice, and how acting is super important. We did a survey on our worker forum. So I told you we have 40 people on the worker forum, and they're all super excited and engaged about the opportunity. And they have tapped into their network to give a pulse check on, like, how are you feeling about worker voice initiatives and what kind of barriers are you experiencing? So we've gotten 500 surveys in so far. And in that response rate, we've seen that 70% of those workers say, yeah, we've got places to share our feedback. But less than half, I think like 40% say nobody does anything with it. And we don't trust that they will do anything with it. So that's the real problem. And I think a lot of times employers are scared of what they're going to hear.
Yep.
And you have to embrace feedback. And you've got to understand, it's not just about, can I do it? Can I not do it? It's how companies figure everything else out, right? We're problem solvers. We figure it out all the time. So you can't be afraid of what you're going to hear. And I've always, and I'll finish with this, you know, what I bring into this work is my own experience of, you know, how do we make this practical? Because I get it. You know, it's not something that is easy to do, especially at a large organization. And so when you think about worker voice, you've got like corporate initiatives. So surveys are important, but it's important to like ensure you've got the right technology to be able to, you know, analyze the data accurately and support your leaders with automated action plans and tying it to business metrics. So you've got your surveys, but at the site level, right? We found that workers just want to talk to their manager. Like they just want to go to their manager and say, hey, I have something to say. I can't wait on an annual survey.
The base of human connection. Let's just talk,
right? And so how do you equip those people leaders who are super important to this? The frontline managers are the most critical part to this because they own culture. They support they're the champions that you need. How do you equip them with the resources that they need in order to effectively communicate with their workers, active listening, know how to follow up, know how to support them? And so those are the things that we're digging into in order to make this work and be real and tangible. But we don't want to complicate it. We don't want it to be conceptual. We want it to be real and tangible and something that employers can pick up and adopt.
Yeah. And those small steps that from that feedback you're receiving that are actionable quickly, you know, all of us have put together, you know, strategy plans of this is what we can do today. This is 90 days. This is 6 months. This is in 2027. But the things that you can do today and quickly respond help minimize that distrust of I'm sharing it, but I never hear anything back. And I've shared it again. The next time you asked me, I shared it again and I never heard anything back. And by the third time, they're probably resigning.
Yes. So
we talk about turnover rates and we talk about our industry and the opportunities. What you're describing is a core foundation in large organizations of how do you get to as many people as possible, their ability to share that feedback. But your responsibility is, what are you going to do? It's exactly what you said. But there are ways to do it that feel responsive and actionable and grateful for the feedback, and then move faster to reduce turn and save your business. And I know many of those brands in the room yesterday have all similar struggles. They may not all sell the same product, but they have similar challenges. And so I really appreciate the work that you and everyone at the team at Jobs for the Future does. I'm so happy to know you, to be involved with your work, to help you, whatever I can do to make sure that we're sharing Retail Pride, you know, among all of these 75 million future great jobs for these people. I'm all in on your work. So thank you.
Listen, I heard Alex from yesterday. She's passing out Retail Pride books in the city of New York. So we are
strangers on the street.
the work you do, it's so good. And even this podcast, like giving folks like me a voice, it's awesome. So I appreciate you.
Thank you. So luckily, you and I are, you know, in adjoining conference rooms, so we get to go spend some time together now. So thank you, Sharika. It's been a joy.
Thank you.
All right. We are I'm going to wrap this up. I am back in 2 weeks on April 19th with Michelle Emery, who was most recently the Vice President of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Macy's. And I'm going to throw out, if you happen to be in Cincinnati, come and see me next week live at the Shop Marketplace Conference, where I'm going to deliver the opening keynote that I'm calling 16 Months, 31 States, and Hundreds of Retail Success Stories, What I Learned Living in Campgrounds for a Year. So it will be a very fun event next week in Cincinnati. Be sure to follow Ubik on LinkedIn for details on the show, and go to ubik.com to watch or listen to all of the past episodes. We've got a great new homepage on the Ubik website for this show. And right now, Ubik is hosting their 2024 Frontline Excellence Awards, which is a global recognition program for all of their Ubik customers and community. And I'm excited to be a jury on this year's Frontline Excellence Awards for the third year in a row. And with that said, if you're on the hunt for a next generation communication, micro learning, and task management mobile platform, and task management mobile platform to guide your frontline teams into the future, check out what Ubik can do. Just click on the link in the comments. And with that, have a great weekend, everyone. And we'll see you in Cincinnati next week or back here on the show in two. Thank you, everyone.